Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
What Teresa doesn't understand is that the tourists don't want a real Indian experience. They want what they see in the movies. And who can blame them? Movie Indians are terrific. So you watch the same movies the tourists do until John Dunbar becomes your spirit animal and stands with Fist, your best girl. You memorize Johnny Depp's lines from The Lone Ranger and hang a picture of Iron Eyes Cody in your work locker. For a while, you are really into Dustin Hoffman's Little Big Man. It's Little Big Man that does you in.
That was fantasy author Rebecca Roanhorse reading an excerpt from her Hugo and Locus Award-winning short story, Welcome to Your Authentic Indian Experience. Rebecca is also known for her contribution to the Star Wars universe with the 2019 novel Star Wars: Resistance Reborn. Her latest novel is the first book in the Between Earth and Sky trilogy. It's an epic fantasy called Black Sun. The book is inspired by the civilizations of the pre-Columbian Americas and features an intoxicating blend of celestial prophecies, political intrigue, and forbidden magic. Rebecca says that the Americas' ancient indigenous civilizations were just as fascinating, advanced, and more diverse than the old English settings and cultures that inspire the worlds of famous epics like A Song of Ice and Fire and Lord of the Rings.
I think people are looking, when they read epic fantasy, they're often looking for grandeur and escapism. And unfortunately, a lot of people still don't see the Americas as a place where all of that existed, where these incredible societies who had sophisticated architecture and city planning and art and poetry thrived. We still sort of get labeled with the primitive or the savage label. And that's unfortunate because there's an incredible history of civilization here on these continents.
Can you give me an example of one of the most surprising facts that you learned while researching indigenous American civilizations?
Well, I've been reading in this area for decades, so I'm not sure that I came across anything super surprising. But one of the coolest things that I found was that a lot of the cities, even the city of Cahokia, which is right outside of St. Louis, you can go and see where the mounds exist still to this day, created a long celestial line, sort of like ley line, so that it aligned directly with the rising and the setting of Venus.
Wow, that's incredible, yeah. I would imagine that one of the biggest challenges you faced while working on Black Sun was building the world in which the story takes place. How did you go about doing that?
Oh, well, so the way that I world build is maybe a little bit different from other people, but I often start with character. So I know I have a character, for example, I know I have a sailor, and then what do I need to fill her out? Well, she needs to have a ship. So what will that ship look like? Let's, you know, research the maritime Maya. She needs to have a culture, a seafaring culture. Well, what does that culture look like? Well, I want it to be, you know, all female, and I want it to be inspired sort of by sirens. So I do research on that. And so I actually build character out instead of building the world inward and then putting characters on top of it.
Mm-hmm. You used to work as a lawyer and you practiced Indian law. I'm curious, did that experience help you in any way with building the Black Sun story world?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, I'm sure it does. I practiced law for 10 years. I was a litigator. And, you know, when you're litigating, you're sort of telling a story. It's not as interesting as a fantasy or science fiction story. But, you know, you certainly have to be persuasive and you have to do a lot of research and draw from facts to craft that. So no doubt my legal experience feeds into my creative work.
Mm-hmm. There are many memorable, fully fleshed out characters in Black Sun, and one of my favorites is Serapio. Can you tell me a bit about him?
Oh, so Serapio, he opens the story sort of in a very dramatic way when he's a child. And it is really his story that Black Sun is telling. He is a boy who carries the trauma and the weight of history on his shoulders because his people have experienced a genocide. And he is set on this path. He has made a vessel of a vengeful god to go and sort of serve vengeance on the priests of Tova who did his people wrong. But it's a destiny he would not have chosen, I think, if he'd had other options. He just doesn't know that he has other options. And so a lot of the story is about his journey and his inevitable choice that he has to make, whether or not to enact this vengeance.
Mm-hmm. It's great to see a character with a disability and someone who is really not afraid to take action. Do Indigenous cultures view physical disability in a different way than we in mainstream Western culture do?
I think that that's fair. I think that that's one of the reasons that I decided to write a blind character, is I wanted to capture some of that difference. Often in Mesoamerican cultures, my understanding is that they looked at people with disabilities as quote unquote God touched, that this was actually a gift from the gods that marked you, that made you special, and you were treated accordingly. And I had a Mesoamerican scholar, David Bowles, do a little research for me, and he actually found some passages from Mayan texts that said exactly this, that people with disabilities were God touched and they were to be valued, not sort of cast aside the way that we do in our culture.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good lesson if our culture would learn that. Yeah. What did you do to depict Serapio's blindness so accurately?
I did a lot of research. I started with books. There's a great book out there, something like the top 20 mistakes people make when they write blind characters. And I went through that looking for all the sort of tropes and things that I no doubt, you know, was going to employ and mark those off. And then I had two blind consultants, women who, one of them is a friend, and I asked her about her experiences of being blind and going to blind school and what that looked like. And then I had a professional disability consultant who is blind and works in the sci-fi community quite a bit. She read the text and she looked for, you know, places where I had made assumptions. She really helped me draw out or tease out the difference between adaptive technologies and superpowers. And if you look at Serapio, he has crows that he uses to see, and that's sort of like seeing eye dogs. And he has a staff, which is a fighting staff, but he also uses as an instrument to help him see. So I really tried to make his blindness centered in reality and tried to stay away from some of the tropes that you might see in Daredevil or some of these popular undertakings that blind people tend to say did not get it right. But, you know, no doubt I made mistakes as well. But I tried my best. So hopefully I did a good job.
I understand that the Indigenous Futurism movement has had an impact on your work. What exactly is Indigenous Futurism and how has it affected your writing?
Yeah, so the term Indigenous Futurism was coined by Grace Dillon. She's a professor out at Portland State, and she was very inspired by Afrofuturism. And it's a movement in science fiction and fantasy to sort of bring Indigenous voices and viewpoints to the forefront. But it's not just about the future, which is very important. It's also about reclaiming the past, creating new narratives to reframe the past, sort of like what I'm doing here with Epic Fantasy, and making sure that Native people show up in the present. And again, yes, in the future. So that we're not just stuck in the 1800s. We're not just telling quote unquote cowboy and Indian stories or stories about the West and things like that, that we can go to space or we can live in an apocalyptic future or we can do a myriad of other things that show that we are not dead and we are not stuck in the past.
Is Indigenous Futurism a new movement?
I think it's been around quite a bit. It sort of exploded recently, I would say, in the past few years. But I think Grace coined the term, I don't know, probably a decade, maybe 20 years ago. I'm not sure.
Okay, so relatively new anyway. There's this great quote I read. You have this great quote where you said, writing for me has always been an act of survival. I originally started writing not to get published, but to rediscover who I was as a person. So can you tell me how writing has helped you rediscover who you are?
In a selfish way, it's allowed me to spend a lot of time cultivating my creativity, creating these worlds and these characters and these people that I think if I had even known it was an option to become an author when I was younger, I might have chosen a different career path. But growing up, being a woman of color, being a Black and Native kid in Texas, I never saw science fiction and fantasy writers that looked like me. And certainly there were no characters that looked like me unless they were like orcs or something and inherently evil. So Yeah, it just, I didn't even know it was an option. And so after I grew up a bit and I discovered authors like N.K. Jemisin and Octavia Butler and others, I realized, oh, hey, you know, I can do this too. And so that's what sort of gave me the courage to rediscover my childhood love. Well, and even my lifelong love of science fiction and fantasy, and dare to try to turn it into a career.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's great for you. And it's also great for us who get to read your work. You grew up as an adoptee and you have found family in your husband's Navajo culture. Do you see a connection between the Navajo culture and the epic quests in your work?
Oh, well, you know, one of the neat things I heard Stephen Graham Jones, who is a native horror writer, talk about the idea that in Western adventure stories, you have sort of the hero's journey. I think a lot of us are familiar with that, where the hero leaves home and they sort of spiral outwards to discover themselves and go on this adventure and grow into adulthood. And only when they've done all that do they return home. But Jones posited the idea that in indigenous adventure stories, often the protagonist starts outside of home on the edge of the spiral. And what they have to do is sort of spiral back in to find the center, to find community and to find home. And often home may not be all it's cracked up to be, because living in community is very difficult, actually. And people are people. And so, yeah, I think that does reflect my journey as an adoptee. And that's why I think you see the characters in Black Sun, and actually in all my works, are often outsiders. They're trying to find community. They're trying to sort of embrace who they are or their destiny with mixed results. But that is definitely the journey that I keep coming back to and that I'm interested in writing.
Interesting. Yeah. A few years ago, you wrote a short story called Welcome to Your Authentic Indian Experience. It won two major awards, the 2018 Hugo Award for Best Short Story and the 2017 Nebula Award for Best Short Story. Can you tell us a bit about this story?
Yeah, you know, this was actually the first short story I ever wrote and published.
Wow.
So a call went out from Apex Magazine. They were going to do an issue on indigenous fantasists. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just try. Maybe I'll write a story and send it in. My book was not going to be published until 2018, although I'd already sold it at that point. But it takes about 18 months to make it to the shelf. And so I was thinking, oh, I could write this story and maybe it will help. You know, maybe a dozen people will read it or something, and it'll give me a little bit of publicity. I could say I was published before the book comes out. But it just took off. It just exploded. And people ended up really loving it. And I think a lot of diaspora folks, it really resonated for them and their experiences. And, you know, it's been optioned now by Amazon Studios, and hopefully we'll actually see it on a screen one day.
Yeah, I hope so. Looking forward to that. It's a very powerful story. Hard to believe that it's the first short story you write. But then again, given what a great writer you are, it's not that surprising. And I think to me, it seems like a large part of the power of the story and the impact comes from your use of the second person point of view. Did the idea for you writing it in the second person, the you point of view, come to you right from the beginning? Or was that something that you settled upon after writing a draft or two?
Yeah, I had written a draft. I'd written it in third person, and it was just kind of flat. Felt like it didn't really come off the page the way that I wanted it to. And it's always a little bit scary to try to write in second person. It's very hit or miss, I think, sometimes. And you really have to have a purpose. But I realized the story, I really wanted to indict the reader. I really wanted to bring them along and for people to see their role in sort of the main character's fate and how this is there's a very fine line between fiction, what I'm writing in science fiction, and virtual reality, and what actually happens day to day in our world.
Getting back to Black Sun, it's the first book in the Between the Earth and Sky trilogy. Do you know what's going to happen in the next two books?
I do. I did not know when I when I wrote Black Sun, but as I started to plan book two, I had to figure out sort of the whole arc of the story and the characters and how I wanted them to end in order to start drafting book two. So now I know.
And I imagine it doesn't hurt to ask. I suspect you will not be able to tell us, but can you give us any hints about what we can look forward to reading in the next two books?
Oh, well, you get a larger look at the world. The world of the Meridian actually expands and you encounter some new cultures. You're going to have a new point of view character. And one of the characters in Black Sun who did not have a point of view chapter gets to have a point of view. So, and that's about all I'm going to say. We also pick up with, of course, you know, our main characters and what's happened to them and where their stories go.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Can't wait to read it. Rebecca Roanhorse, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Rebecca Roanhorse is the author of the novel Black Sun. It's the first book in the Between Earth and Sky trilogy. Find out more about Rebecca at our website, wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, John Cleese, Chris France, and Rebecca Roanhorse. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
You're a true vulgarian, aren't you?
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I move for no man.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. Take care and stay safe. I'm Doug Gordon.
And I hereby undertake not to repeat any such slander at any time in the future.